That last quote there is interesting. It said, if you didn't read it, it said a fanatic has been described as a person who, when unsure of his direction, doubles his speed. And I often feel like that. In fact, it reminds me of Patrick McManus. He was a short story writer and humorist. If you got Field and Stream magazine, you might have run across him. He always wrote the column in the back. And a lot of people, when they would get the magazine, they would turn there very quickly to the back, read his column first. It was very good. But he talked about getting lost in the woods, deep in the woods, and the panic that would set in, and how the more you realized how lost you were, the more panic you became, and you sped up, and you would start going faster and faster, and pretty soon you're bouncing off trees and rocks and everything else, and by the time you were done, you were really lost. And he had what he called the modified stationary panic. And what he suggested you do is, when you feel that panic start to come, jump up in the air, run in place so you don't go anywhere, you don't hit anything, and you'll be safe. You'll still be where you started. And I thought how true that is even in life in general. It seems like we dig ourselves into holes pretty easily. We're going to continue talking about Sabbath, and I want to talk about Sabbath today as Sabbath as resistance, and you'll hopefully understand what I'm talking about. Next week we'll conclude, and we'll talk some about how to take a really good Sabbath. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. There were a couple of cardiologists, Meyer Friedman and Ray Rosenman, and they shared a practice. They practiced together, and they realized at one time that the chairs in their waiting room were pretty shabby looking, and so they hired an upholsterer to come in and reupholster the chairs in their waiting room. By the way, if anybody knows a very good upholsterer, let me know. I have a chair. I've been trying for 10 years, I think, to find somebody. And they came in, or this guy came in, and he reupholstered their chairs. But then he told them, he said, you know, your chairs are, I've never run across this before. It's completely unique. He says, the wear pattern, they don't wear like that. Your chairs are very strange. It looks like, you know, they're all wore on the front part of the chair and on the armrests. It's as if your people are always getting up. They can't sit still, and so they're grabbing and they're jumping up and they're moving. They're like they're hyper or something like that. Well, they didn't think much of it, and they kept going, and as they continued in their practice, they said, hey, wait a second, remember what he said? And they came up with this theory that there was a thing called a type A personality. And it became, that's where, when you hear that term, you've probably all heard that, that's where it came from. And what they realized is these are people who, you know, they just are on the go constantly. They can't sit still. Our son Adam, that's our second son, you've never met him. When he was little, we used to hold a shiny, brand new, crisp dollar in front of him, and it meant something to him at that time. And we said, Adam, if you can sit still for 1 minute, you can have this dollar. He never got a dollar from us. We used to do it all the time. This is hilarious. He would start getting really nervous and start shaking, and then next thing you know, he'd be up. He couldn't stand it. And what Friedman and Rosenman realized was, these are people, there are people like this, and these are these type A, these driven people. They can't stop, they want to constantly be going, and they also happen to end up in the cardiologist waiting room because they all had heart problems. And so they noticed this, and then they went on, and of course if you have a type A, you got to have something else. They then developed type B, and over the years this has been debated back and forth, and you know, some say it's not really a thing. But one of the other things that they realized while they were doing this was something that they called hurry sickness. They noticed that a lot of their patients had hurry sickness, and they defined it a couple of ways. One of them, it's a behavior pattern characterized by continual rushing and anxiousness, an overwhelming and continual sense of urgency. Have you ever noticed that when you, like, you know, you go out to the car, you go to get in and it's locked, and you, where are the keys? And there's a little bit, you know, we're supposed to be somewhere, and so it starts, you know, kind of slow like that until you go back in the house and they're not in there where they're supposed to be either. Now it elevates, and it starts elevating more and more and more, and you just get anxious and nervous. So that was one of them. Then the second one was, the second definition they gave was, it's a malaise in which a person feels chronically short of time and so tends to perform every task faster and to get flustered when encountering any kind of delay. Now, my guess is that a very high percentage of you in this room have experienced hurry sickness a time or two in your life. In fact, I would guess that some of you have a real problem with hurry sickness. It keeps going on and on and on all the time. And I just thought that would be a great way to start your Sunday morning. See, Phil, I told you. It wasn't going to start good. But I believe that the antidote for this, or the cure for it, is following God's rhythm. And part of that is Sabbath. And we need to see it as Sabbath resistance. Turn in your Bibles, if you will, to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy chapter 5, and I'll tell you, it's going to be the Ten Commandments again, and I'm not doing that to trick you. This is a good one because, you know, no, I didn't preach from the same thing. Last week we talked about the commandment to observe the Sabbath, and we talked about what was said in Exodus 20, and this is Deuteronomy 5. Deuteronomy 5 is also Moses, and we're not going to read the whole thing this morning. I'm just going to read verses 12 through 15. Last week we read all the commands. Verse 12, observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Now, it's very familiar to you. It's very similar to the Exodus version. It's also very long, like we talked last week, that in the Exodus 20 version, this command is the longest. It's also long here, as you can see. And so there's a lot of similarities. But there's a couple of differences, and that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to look at the differences that we see and maybe why that is. And the first difference we see is that it says, observe the Sabbath rather than remember the Sabbath. Now, one of the things, one of the ways we understand this is understanding the audience. The audience in Exodus were the Israelites who had been in Egypt and had been slaves there. They come out of Egypt, and you know the story. They come out of Egypt, they cross the Red Sea, they travel to Sinai, and they're scared to go up Mount Sinai, so they send Moses up Mount Sinai. He gets the Ten Commandments and brings them back down, and they also had the incident with the golden calf and all that, but they eventually get the Ten Commandments there. So that's the audience that is there. From Mount Sinai then, they head north to Israel. That's where they are always headed, to the Promised Land. Okay, so this is just kind of like on the way. So they reach there rather quickly. And if you remember the story, when they get there, they send 12 guys into the Promised Land to spy it out. They come back, and all 12 say, it is a fantastic place. It's just beautiful land. It's just going to be fantastic. It's a great place. But 10 of them say, but they're well fortified, they're well defended, and they're big and strong and mean, and we shouldn't go in there because they'll wipe us out. And two guys, Joshua and Caleb, which is why you have a lot of people today called Joshua and Caleb, they said, yeah, all that's true, but God is on our side, and so we can go in. But since there was only two of them, you know the story, the 10 went out, and they decide, nope, they're not going in. And so God says, all right, you're going to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. While they're wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, that entire generation dies out, except for Joshua and Caleb. Now, there are some people who were in Egypt at the time, you know, so some of the kids, they would have been there, but they weren't slaves in Egypt. And so this is an entirely new generation. This is the next generation, and even Moses is going to die. And so he's giving this is his last sermon, or one of his last. Deuteronomy, if you didn't know, is just Moses' sermons. And he's giving this sermon, and so it's to an entirely new generation. And I think that's why he says, observe the Sabbath. Now, observe, definition is, it's not like, you know, see it, you know, watch people do it. It's observe it, as in guard it. Definition I have here is guard it, put a hedge around it. And that put a hedge around it kind of gives you a good understanding. So go to the next slide here. I have a picture. This is a thorn hedge. And you were supposed to put it around our Sabbath and guard it closely. This is what you'll find out. If you are going to practice a true Sabbath, you will have to say no far more than you ever thought, most likely. I felt bad. This week, on my Sabbath, my mom asked me to do something, and I said, nope. And she took it well. I kind of felt bad saying no, but you will, and it's hard. I mean, that was an easy example. I mean, that's someone who likes me, I think. Yeah. But I still had to say no. It's not easy to say no to people sometimes. Maybe you're one of those people. You just don't like saying no. And it seems so easy. Oh, it's just a little thing. I can go do that. But then you go do that. The next thing you do, now you're doing something else, and you're going and doing that. And it keeps on going, and it never stops. And before long, it's gone. One of the hardest things about developing a Sabbath rhythm is being able to say no. A lot of times, a lot of those no's are to yourself. Because you're going to say, oh man, I just want to do this. And we start to justify things. And I told you in the very beginning, I'm not going to be legalistic about this. I have to be legalistic about some things in my personal life for right now until I get it straightened out. And then I don't have to worry about it anymore. Something else will come in. But we have to be people who are willing to guard it. When we were in Africa, we didn't have the town we were in didn't have electricity, and so we had a little solar system, just a small one for our house, and it just gave us a little bit of light for a while in the evening. And how a solar system works: you have solar panels that collect energy during the day, and that energy goes down into a battery. Then at night, you run lights off that battery. Now, I don't know a whole lot about battery technology, and I certainly don't want to bore you, but I'm gonna. A car battery won't work for a solar system. I mean, it will for a few days, but car battery is meant to give a lot of power for a very short period of time. Then it's supposed to get charged back up. So when you start your car, it takes a lot of power. And then you drive away, and while you're driving, your alternator's spinning and charging it back up. But if you discharge it, I mean, you know how you, when you're, something's wrong, and you run the starter for a while, and you should stop, but you don't, because you think just one more time, it'll work this time. And then, you hit it and kick it, and, you know, well, that's how I fix cars. I had a Volvo. You got to kick a Volvo. Electrical problems. But if you run it for very long, it just runs down, and next thing you know, you got a dead battery. So those won't work. So what you have to use is what's called a deep cycle battery, and it's made to discharge a lot farther, and then you charge it back up when it's done. So like on trolling motors, that's what you use. But even those, you can't discharge more than about 50%. If you regularly discharge it more than 50% over and over again, it's not going to last very long. And so our solar system had a deep cycle battery, but when it got to 50%, there was a little controller on there, and it would shut it off. And so you'd be just enjoying the evening, reading a book, and boom, off it went. And it kept you from ruining that battery. And you know, that's kind of the way we are. We have to be careful, and people have this tendency to want to push themselves and just go way below 50%, down past 25%, down to, 1%. We try and run it until we're absolutely done, and we don't recharge. We don't have that hedge that's protecting that battery, and we end up ruining it. Now they have lithium batteries that you can discharge a lot farther without hurting them, and that's kind of what we do too. We try and invent things that enable us to keep going far beyond what we should. And so we have all these new things that we develop. And if you're older, don't sit there and blame young people. I'll tell you, the one appliance in the kitchen that you will never take away from my mom is a microwave. She loves that thing. And I'll tell you, there's some things that are quick and easy and really nice that I don't want to do without. Indoor plumbing, that was brilliant. Whoever came up with that. But we have to be careful, and we have to protect our Sabbath. We have to keep that hedge around it. The second thing that's different is the ending. At the ending of the Exodus version, it says that we are to keep the Sabbath because God took 6 days to create the world, and then he rested. Well, he doesn't use that one this time. This is what he says. This is verse 15. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Now, this is interesting, because as I said, this crowd was the next generation. They weren't slaves in Egypt. Although all those who were able to, they were old enough to hear Moses speak at this time, would have been there as children. And what he's pointing him back to is the Egypt thing. Now, I think it goes a little bit farther than just, well, that's another mighty thing that God did. I think it's addressing a government, a lifestyle, and an economy that they found in Egypt. And there's this tendency to go back to this. And basically what he's saying is, you're supposed to live differently. You are supposed to live with my rhythm. You are supposed to live with a Sabbath rest. You're not supposed to live like the Egyptian economy wants you to live. And we talked about this last week. If you remember, the Egyptians wanted them to make more and more bricks and to cut their own hay and do all this stuff. And they kept pushing this and kept pushing this. And you know, the problem is, any economic system you have has to be married, or it is tied to your spiritual system as well. And if your spiritual system isn't sound, your economic system isn't sound. Do you realize that even that's true even here today in our country? Capitalism works if you've got a good spiritual backbone behind it. When you don't have a good spiritual backbone behind it, it can be a mess. And that's when exploitation occurs. That's when people abuse. All those kinds of things come in. And what he's saying is, I don't want you to be like the Egyptians. If you go, there's a documentary, and I had to check because I knew it was on there on YouTube before, and I wasn't sure if it still was, and it is. And I encourage you to look at it. Don't watch the whole thing. It's long. It's like 4 hours, but it's called Century of Self, or Century of the Self. Century of Self, and I think you'll get it. And what happened, it talks about what happened in our country after World War I. And we had people coming home from the war, and they came home and they had all these factories that were running to make stuff for war, and they had to change. And now they had a larger workforce that they had to employ. And they had factories that they needed to change what kind of things they made. And they realized that if they didn't do this, that there's a problem with, the masses, as they might say. What are they going to do? They're going to riot. They're going to be out of control. So we've got to do something with this. And so there was a man by the name of Edward Bernays. And Bernays happens to have been the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And they got to thinking, you know, you can control people if you get them thinking the right way. And so they move from a needs-based economy, they knew they had to do this, to a wants-based economy. And to do that, what they realized they needed to do is they needed to change people's desires. And whereas people might want a car, they realized it would be better if we could get them to desire a certain kind of car. And so they would take this kind of car that they wanted to sell, and they'd get a handsome young man in a suit and a nice hat, and they'd have him standing by the car, and they'd put his beautiful wife in the front seat and two well-behaved kids in the back. And before long, guess what? People wanted that car. And this kept on going and kept on going, and Bernays even did this. They had at that time an Easter parade in New York. And he actually went and found some young women who were in high society, and he paid them to be in the parade, and at a certain point when he gave the signal, they would all stop and break out cigarettes and smoke a cigarette in the parade, and everybody would see it. And from that point on, it became acceptable for women to smoke. Before that, you know, I mean, we're talking about a different issue altogether, but isn't that amazing? It was things like that were intentionally done that it changed our perceptions to that degree. We're so easily manipulated. We're in political season right now. There's not too many political advertisements on grit that I've seen, so I don't see many. But I can almost guess there's an advertisement with a politician wearing a blue shirt. One of the current senators from Indiana was known for this. Everywhere he went, he wore a blue shirt. You know, most politicians are usually lawyers or owners of major factories who wear suits all the time, and they usually wear a white shirt underneath that suit. But in those commercials, they're not wearing a white shirt, they're wearing a blue shirt. Why? What color is the collar of a blue shirt? It's blue. And so you have these politicians doing these things. That's not just a coincidence. They do that stuff intentionally. It's a planned thing. It's guys like Edward Bernays. He's the one that started what became known as public relations. He's the one that started that. And the more you hear about those kinds of things, the more you realize we need to resist. And sometimes we need to get radical about it. The average person, they say, sees between 4,000 and 10,000 ads a day. And all of those are designed to feed our desires. Now, the latest thing that I've found, the latest number, it's like 5 or 6,000 to 10,000. I left it at 4 because I did research on this several years ago, and at that time it was 4, and I just have a hard time believing that. But the next time you go online, whether it be Amazon or whatever, just watch how many advertisements are actually on the page. You'll be shocked. You go to Facebook and you can 1, 2, 3, just look. And they don't even care if you actually look at it and focus on it. They like it sometimes if you just get a glimpse of it. You've probably all had that experience where you were looking up, you know, a salad bowl on one website, and the next thing you know, there's salad bowl advertisements on every site. You know, how'd they do that? Yeah. All over the place. You drive down the highway. You don't think there's a lot of advertising on the highway, but it's all over the place. Notice it sometime. Just watch. You'll see not just billboards, but on buildings, on everything. On cars that you pass, there's advertising. You know, they'll wrap your car. We ought to get a Gaines Church wrap and have everybody wrap their car. Yeah, you know, they have the things in the windows. No. But we see those kind of things all the time. Here's another thing that's really interesting. Yeah, go to that next picture there. I was speaking at a church out in Pennsylvania one time, and went out there, and I was staying with this family, and the guy said, you know, storage units were just starting to be built. And he said, I ought to get into that business. He goes, I think that thing is really going to take off. And he didn't, and I'm sure he regrets it to this day. In 1970, the average house was something like 1,000 square foot. Today it's like 1,800 to 2,000 square foot. Isn't it amazing that we are in this, you know, this lifestyle of consume, 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 that we need these things? Isn't that amazing? We actually need these. And I'm not, I know there's probably maybe half of you have one. I haven't, you know. I have a friend who did this for a number of years. He ran a storage, a 900 unit storage facility. And he said the pattern is pretty much the same. People come in, they buy them, they put their stuff in there, they pay the fee for several months, and then they stop paying, and then we, you know, storage wars, then we auction it off. Over and over and over again. He says, the only people who actually use them to store and then they, you know, take stuff out and then put new stuff back in are businesses that, you know, need storage space. He says, but most of the people who use it end up letting it go because they're not going to pay it anymore. But that's a sign of a people, of a society that has gone crazy trying to just continue to consume, consume, consume. And then, after all that consumption, we still come up with what one person said, I can't get no satisfaction. And that's interesting because we look for satisfaction in a lot of different places. We consume stuff. So go ahead to the next one. This is a quote from Reed Hastings. He was the CEO of Netflix. He said this to a group of insiders. It was an industry convention. And he said that his company's real competitor is sleep. He said, you get a show or movie you're really dying to watch and you end up staying up late at night. So we actually compete with sleep, Hastings said, and we're winning. How many here have ever stayed up later than they wanted to watching a movie? And then I see all the rest of you are liars, but that's okay. Reed Hastings is known for making outrageous claims. I think he worries about Amazon video a little bit more than he lets on. But it's this, you know, consume, consume, consume. There's another thing we do to try and get satisfaction and satisfy our desires. Another approach is to be like a lot of Eastern religions, the Buddhists and things like that, and that is detach from it. I don't need anything. It's okay. I don't need to have anything satisfied. And they just try and live life that way. But the Christian way is to put our desires in Jesus. And that means that we are resistant to the world's way. You probably are familiar with Romans 12:2. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I think if you've been a United Brother in our denomination, if you've been in here for a long, long time, you're probably aware that back in the 1800s, there was a split. And when they split, they had a new constitution and old constitution. That's kind of how they delineated it. But they also called it the liberals, and they called our side the radicals. Isn't that interesting? There was a couple at the last church I was at. They came and they showed me their wedding invitation. And they had it because it was their 50th anniversary or something like that. And it actually said that the location was at the Radical United Brethren Church. And back then it was kind of a derogatory thing for some. You know, it was just kind of a, huh. A lot of people today would think that's really cool to have a church named the Radical United Brethren Church. But sometimes we do need to get radical. And this is one of them. And like I said before, I'm not calling you to a legalistic Sabbath. What I'm calling you to is to change your life rhythm and line it up with God. You know, I grew up dreading the Sabbath. I talked about this a little bit last week. Because most of it was rules that I had to, you know, I couldn't do. And now I look forward to it. And I want all of us to be people who look forward to it. Finally. In fact, even your kids. And if I want to say anything, man, make sure your kids love the Sabbath. That's the day you take them to go get ice cream. You know? And before we would have said, no, you can't do that because you can't buy. But man, do something that they love to do. So that every single day of the week, they're looking forward to Sabbath. In fact, I hear people of young people who are embracing this, and they say their kids, their young kids, you know, are asking, is it Sabbath tomorrow? Is it Sabbath tomorrow? Because they're looking forward to it. You see, when we look forward to it, it's because we understand and we realize it's a gift from God. Would you bow your heads in prayer? Our Heavenly Father, we just thank you for an incredible gift. And Father, we also are aware that we're bombarded each and every day with a world that wants to just suck us in, wants us to speed up, to spend, and to live an entirely different way where we aren't even aware of your existence. Father, help us to resist as we Sabbath in thanksgiving for an incredible gift. In Jesus' name I pray, amen.
This has been a message from Gaines Church in Caledonia, Michigan. We'd love to have you join us at one of our Sunday services. Visit gaineschurch.org for more information. One life, one hope, one destination.